Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Help TVO create a better world through the power of learning. Visit TVO.org and make a tax-deductible donation today.
People in this province who died from a substance-related overdose faced substantial gaps in treatment. That according to a new report tracking how the healthcare system serves this population. Tara Gomes is an epidemiologist and principal investigator at the Ontario Drug Policy Research Network. She is co-author of the report done in partnership with Public Health Ontario. And Tara Gomes joins us now. It's good to have you back here.
Thanks, Tara.
Although every time we invite you here, it's because there's not necessarily good news to talk about. And that's where we're going here. Here are some more numbers. Ontario, 10,000 accidental substance toxicity deaths. 10,000 between 2018 and 2022, with a 72% spike in the last year. What explains this?
It's a great question. I think there are probably two main things that have happened in the last couple of years that are driving these rising tragic deaths, which is really, I think, what we need to focus on, is these are preventable tragic deaths. The first is that in around 2015 or 2016, our illicit or unregulated drug supply changed. It used to be mainly heroin, and fentanyl came into that supply. We all talk about fentanyl now, but when that arrived, its potency really started to lead to rising deaths. And with that, we not only now have fentanyl in that supply, we have fentanyl analogs, which can be more potent. We have other sedatives, tranquilizers, all kinds of other substances that are being mixed into that supply, which is making it so unpredictable that when people use it from day to day, they might be getting a very different combination of drugs at very different potencies that can make it incredibly dangerous for them to regulate and figure out how to keep themselves safe.
Fast follow-up on that. Is it all coming in from the States?
It is not necessarily coming in from the States. It is being made here. It is coming in from across borders. The problem is that the way that this is all being mixed together means that it doesn't really matter where it's coming from. We can't stop this at our borders. These are chemicals that can be manufactured anywhere. And so we can't really stop this by enforcement and just closing our borders to these drugs or finding ways to prevent them. We are going to continue to have this unpredictable drug supply if we can't find a way to create access to alternatives for people. It's okay. Unfortunately the circumstance we're in.
I interrupted you. You're going to continue and tell us some other reasons why the spike.
Well, I think the other piece on top of this unpredictable supply is that the pandemic arrived. It's the elephant in the room. We saw changes in how people could access community-based services. People were kind of taken away from their networks of support, moved around to different parts of the city or the province. And that really changed the way that we could respond to keeping people safe. So you take an unpredictable supply that continues to get worse, and you take, you know, the removal and lowered accessibility of these community-based programs and services, and it's a perfect storm for these harms to continue to increase. Hmm.
Presumably, treatment works. So what's the big stumbling block to getting more treatment for more people that need it?
It's an important question because we talk a lot about treatment. It absolutely works. There is evidence to support treatments like methadone and Suboxone. These are medications people can be prescribed to provide them with treatment. That's great, and it can help prevent people from having an overdose if they use these treatments. However, these treatments don't always work because they're very regimented in how people have to access them. Most of the time, people have to go every day to a pharmacy. If you can imagine, try to hold down a job, get your kids to school, take care of kids at home, go on vacation. If you have to be at a pharmacy every single day for an observed dose of a treatment, it's really hard for people to stay in these programs. And they're not always adapting in doses to the supply that people are being exposed to, so people might go into withdrawal even if they're in treatment. But the other thing that I think we really need to build into this conversation is, and our report showed this, not everybody who's dying is eligible for treatment. Only about two-thirds of people have a diagnosis of a substance use disorder, so an addiction, that would make them eligible for treatment. So there are thousands of people that died that were in our report who likely use drugs recreationally, occasionally, but because of how potent and unpredictable that supply is, they're at risk of dying every time they use that supply. And that's why we can't just focus on treatment. We also have to think about harm reduction, how we provide people with safe spaces to use drugs, safer supplies of drugs, so that we actually can help prevent all of the circumstances of the deaths that are happening right now in the province.
That is a highly controversial issue, I don't have to tell you, and not every political party in this country agrees on the advisability of taking that approach. Mm-hmm. So let me give you a chance to make the case for why you think safe injection sites, while, what's the word I'm looking for? While problematic to some, may actually be the way to go here.
Absolutely. So safe consumption sites are one of the responses that we've seen roll out in the province. These are safe spaces for people to use drugs. So if they use a substance and they overdose, there's somebody there to intervene, which is so important. Three quarters of the people who die from an opioid or other substance-related death were alone when they died. And that is a huge element of this issue.
So there's some supervision on these sites.
Exactly. There are people there who are trained to help respond. And there's evidence. And I think this is what's very difficult because this has become such a politicized topic. If we take the politics out of this, there are studies, one that just came out based in Ontario earlier this year, that shows that communities where supervised consumption sites open end up having lower rates of overdoses in those communities, and they're sustained over the long term. So there is real evidence and research that is showing that these sites work. But instead of listening to that, we have this moral dialogue around, you know, people should just not use drugs, that there's this stigma usually rooted around people using drugs that interferes with these conversations around what actually the evidence shows could work and help prevent these deaths. And so my hope is that we can really start to focus more on conversations around evidence as opposed to some of the rhetoric that's swirling around these sites.
Okay, let me pick up on this notion of consumption and treatment services. 17, I gather, mm-hmm. centers around the province. Does that do enough?
The short answer is no. We have many more than 17 communities across the province who are experiencing harms from substance use. And there are many that are trying to open sites and can't get approvals and funding for them. And unfortunately, right now, we're in a situation where there are two sites who don't have funding and will close at the end of this month if they don't secure funding
where
for those
they?
Sites. Those are in Sudbury and in Timmins, two areas where we know that there are enormously high rates of opioid-related deaths, and these sites are needed. And I'm personally, and I know people who work in these sites and who rely on these sites, are afraid. We're afraid of what will happen if these sites go away, because the people who rely on them are not going to have a safe space to use drugs anymore. And so the ultimate reality is their risk of dying is going to go up as soon as these sites go away.
If there are, in fact, 17 province-wide, and I think, is it only one now left in Northern Ontario? If that's the case, give us some better numbers. What do we need, actually?
Oh, that is hard to say, but I would say we need to multiply that many-fold as a starting point. We really need to think about the North, which is the part of our province that actually has the highest rates of opioid-related deaths, and the fact that we have one site up there. And we also need to be creative. It may be that in more rural, remote parts of the province, we need different solutions. We need mobile solutions. A brick-and-mortar, you know, supervised consumption site may not be the solution in every single community or region that needs it, but we need to have those conversations and talk with communities and people who use drugs within those communities to see what they need, how it can be tailored to their needs, and how we can rapidly scale up these services to those communities.
I want to give you another chance to hit this nail on the head, because I'm sure people watching this program now have seen either documentaries or news footage of some safe, what do you call it? I called it injection, but you call it safe.
Consumption
yeah. sites, which are frightening to look at, because there are some of the most vulnerable people in our society in these sites who look like they are doing significant harm to themselves. And if you're not a professional and you're looking at it with a layperson's eyes, you are thinking, what in heaven's name is going on here? Mm-hmm. So give us a better understanding of why you really believe that's the way to go.
I guess I'll start by saying one thing. We are losing 7 people every single day in this province to preventable, accidental toxicities from drug use. I'm really afraid we're forgetting those numbers and we're getting used to that being a reality. And I'm not comfortable with that being a reality. We need to find ways to prevent these deaths. And so what these sites are doing is providing a way for people to stay safe when using drugs. And I think I would urge people to think about the alternative. If you don't have community-based programs with people who are there to help support people, who use drugs to keep them safe while using drugs, but also they play a really pivotal role in connecting people to other services within their community. If you take that away, it's not going to stop people from using drugs. It's going to push them into hiding that drug use, using in other public spaces, not being able to discard of the things that they are using, the equipment that they're using when using drugs in a safe way. There are all these other implications. I think sometimes people assume that if these go away, people will just stop using drugs. We're just helping people use drugs. People aren't going to stop using drugs. We've used drugs for centuries. It's not going to change the pattern of substance use. It's going to change where it happens. It's going to decrease the safety of people who are using drugs. And it's also going to really impact communities because we won't have a safe space to coordinate care and to help support people within these communities who are using drugs.
In which case, in our last 30 seconds, there's every likelihood somebody from the Ministry of Health or from the Mental Health and Addictions part of the ministry we'll get a transcript of this interview, and you can give them some free advice right now. What do they need to do?
First of all, recognize the urgency of how many people are dying and do that publicly and use that to inform your decisions. And secondly, and I know this is a hard ask, but take the politics out of this. There is clear evidence around how we can keep providing evidence-based treatment and doing it in a really, really well-adapted way to people's needs. And there's really clear evidence around the benefits of various harm reduction programs like safe consumption sites and safer supply programs. So rely on the evidence, engage with communities, find out what they need and how you can help financially support the investments needed to put in place those various different evidence-based programs within the communities that need them.
That's epidemiologist Tara Gomes. Tara, as always, thanks for coming into TVO and sharing your views on this.
Thanks for having me.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is made possible through generous philanthropic contributions from viewers like you. Thank you for supporting TVO's journalism.